Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Monday, the 18th of December, 2017. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Glad you could join us.
Coming up. South Africa's ruling African National Congress has been electing its new leader and flag bearer for the 2019 presidential elections. To some, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma shouldn't be allowed to replace her former husband and president.
She inherited a political infrastructure of her former husband, and she went muted on issues such as state capture.
But how divided is the ruling ANC party?
There are really two very substantial wings now in the ANC, one calling for change, the other one largely calling for continuity, although with a different face at the helm.
Also in the program, today is International Migrants Day, and we'll get to hear about the plight of migrants on the Greek island of Lesbos.
That's right indeed, Jen. These are just some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but first, here's a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I am Kai Dombach with the DW News. In South Africa, the African National Congress has started the process of voting for who will succeed Jacob Zuma as party leader. The vote will be between Zuma's ex-wife, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, and current Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa. The final count is still underway, but was supposed to be finished at midday. The Electoral Commission of South Africa said Ramaphosa had the most support going into the nomination vote.
Comrade Cyril Ramaphosa, nominated by 1,469 branches across six provinces, and Comrade has accepted nomination.
The winner of this election will take the ANC's place on the ballot when South Africa holds its next presidential elections in 2019. A UN World Food Programme convoy was attacked by Boko Haram in northeast Nigeria on Sunday, leaving four dead. It is unclear whether the dead were employed by the UN or were drivers or assistants. A witness told the AFP news agency that militants also stole a truck carrying food and two other cars. Some 8.5 million people require food aid in northeast Nigeria. Police in the German port city of Hamburg are asking for the public's help to identify rioters during July's G20 summit. Police released dozens of photos and videos of suspects looting stores and setting fire to cars during the meetings of the world's largest economic powers. Police say thousands were involved in the violent protests, which resulted in around 200 injured police officers and millions of euros in damage. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. A German journalist has been freed from a Turkish prison, according to observers. Meşhule Tolu was arrested in April for allegedly producing terrorist propaganda while working for a left-wing news agency. Tolu was also charged with being a member of a terrorist organization. She has denied the charges against her. Juan Orlando Hernandez claimed a re-election victory in Honduras on Sunday after weeks of delays and claims of election fraud. Former Honduran president Manuel Zelaya refused to accept the results.
Rechazamos absolutamente la declaración del Tribunal Supremo Electoral.
We absolutely reject the declaration of the Supreme Electoral Tribunal. We do not recognize any action that is committed by this criminal organization for electoral fraud organized by the government of Juan Orlando Hernandez.
Hernandez's opponents have called for further protests in the wake of Sunday night's results. At least 16 people have been killed in election protests in Honduras. South Sudanese rebels accused of the government attacking of one of their bases as peace talks started on Monday. A rebel spokesman said the government army attacked a rebel base in Lasu in the south of the country late Sunday. It is unclear if anyone has been hurt or killed in the supposed attack. Peace talks are taking place in the Ethiopian capital. Austria's new government was sworn in today and wanted to have closer ties with neighboring Germany. The new prime minister, Sebastian Kurz, told Germany's Bild newspaper that, quote, many personal, economic, political, and cultural ties bind us to Germany, end quote. His center-right People's Party formed a coalition with the right-wing Freedom Party over the weekend. Kurz, at the age of 31, is now the youngest national leader in the world. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
Welcome once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Remember, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa.
We begin today's program with the big story of the day, and that is South Africa's ruling party, the African National Congress, ANC, that has been voting to replace its leader, President Jacob Zuma. Results are expected in time from now. It is widely believed that Cyril Ramaphosa will win the chairmanship of the ANC instead of the former African Union chairperson Dlamini Nkosazana Zuma, who had the backing of her former husband Jacob Zuma. This marks the end of Jacob Zuma's rule. He has been at the helm of the ANC for the last 10 years, and his tenure as leader of the party and president of South Africa has been marred by a string of corruption scandals. From Johannesburg, Subri Govenda sent this report.
The start of casting of the ballots for the election of the new leader to succeed Jacob Zuma has not been smooth sailing. After a tortuous and tension-filled start, more than 4,700 delegates began to cast their ballots for Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and the other contender, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, late on Sunday night and continued this morning. However, from the start it was clear to many that Ramaphosa will triumph over Dlamini Zuma, who had the backing of her former husband and South African President Jacob Zuma. Political analyst Samadoda Fikeni explained why Dlamini Zuma did not fare well.
She inherited a political infrastructure of her former husband, and she went muted on issues such as state capture, on major issues happening in the state-owned companies, on major issues happening around the President Zuma, has unfortunately drowned her standing record.
Some of the delegates expressed their views on the election of the new leader.
Well, I feel great that Cyril Ramaphosa has won, and I think he will take the country to a next level, because with these dates, I think we'll have a change. We'll see a difference in South Africa.
This is not a family thing. This is about how the South African do things. He must put someone else instead of Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma.
I have nothing to say about that because I'm not supporting anyone. It doesn't matter who wins or who loses. Still the same as if Zuma was still the president. Just how the things are in this our country, because most of the people are corrupt.
The new leader faces serious challenges. One of these will be to decide whether Jacob Zuma answers corruption charges. This will be watched keenly by most South Africans, including political parties, ANC veterans, and civil society organizations who have come out openly against corruption and state capture.
Subri Govinda with that report. And just like we told you, we are waiting the results from the election of the new leader of the ANC anytime soon from now. So, Jane, what are people saying on Facebook?
Sakanga Mesombe says, there is nothing new. South Africans should vote for Julius Malema. That's who they need.
I think he's talking about the upcoming elections of 2019.
Absolutely.
Many people think that actually Julius Malema will give the next candidate a run for his money. Anyway, Asong Pascal says, Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa should win because I think he will likely stand more just on Zuma's corruption and other cases than his former wife, who may try to cover up. Secondly, it should not be like a family transfer thing. This is what many people have been saying, not from one family member to another one. Anyway.
Keep those comments coming on our Facebook page at DW Africa. Now, the vote to replace Jacob Zuma is perhaps the most pivotal moment for the deeply divided African National Congress since it launched black majority rule under Nelson Mandela's leadership 23 years ago. And to find out how deeply divided the party is, I spoke to Daniel Silk, a political analyst in Cape Town. Take a listen.
Well, it has been extremely divided. In fact, the divisions are at an unprecedented level. and this issue of graft and corruption and cronyism have really polarized the organization. There are really two very substantial wings now in the ANC, one calling for change, the other one largely calling for continuity, although with a different face at the helm.
And would you say Zuma's successors have divided the party even further?
Well, I think that the party was divided before the succession battle. Again, this has been coming some time. The ANC has struggled to be a cohesive unit, just as it has struggled really to find an answer to South Africa's myriad of problems. And if you don't really find answers, if your policy formulation is poor, then clearly this does undermine confidence in the party from not only from the critics of the ANC outside, but clearly from inside the ANC as well. But there's no doubt, as with many political parties around the world, when it comes to succession and choosing a new leader, this clearly is always a catalyst for divisions to emerge and for the wounds to be opened afresh. And it didn't really take that much in the ANC for these wounds to be reopened, given the very polarized state of the party.
Well, with all the divisions witnessed, what should be the top priority of the incoming ANC leader? Because there are high chances that whoever gets that position will be the next president after Jacob Zuma leaves office.
Well, from a purely narrow party point of view, the top priority, I suppose, would be to attempt to unite the ANC itself, as divided as it is. The more difficult issue, I suppose, and it's the second big priority, is to try and reboot South Africa's flagging economy. The country stands really on the precipice now of being downgraded by all the rating agencies to sub-investment grade or junk status, as it is known. So these are challenges that both candidates would have to face. But clearly, to me, the most important issue will be which candidate can really inject a more positive sentiment into the minds of South Africans. You're not going to get everything right that quickly. But the winner will have to ultimately make most South Africans feel at least a little better about their lot going forward into 2018. And the new president will have to restore the conditions for dialogue in South Africa.
I was speaking to Daniel Silk, a political analyst based in Cape Town, South Africa.
Now, today is International Migrants Day. Presently, there are an estimated 66 million people around the world who've been forced to leave their homes. 17% of them are in Europe. The Greek island of Lesbos, for example, is now home to thousands of migrants. The main camp, there is the Moria refugee camp, but it's the people living outside the camp in makeshift homes who live in particularly squalid conditions, and tensions with the local community are rising. DW's Oliver Salet has this exclusive report from Lesbos.
Ahmed Al-Majid can barely move his fingers. It's the morning after another cold night on the Greek island of Lesbos. Ahmed Al-Majid is from Iraq. He's been here on the island of Lesbos for 2 months now, in a makeshift camp just outside the Moria refugee camp.
We don't have a water for washing. We have many refugees sick, but we don't have a medicine here just for emergency.
Next door is the official Camp Moria. It looks like a high security prison, made for refugees that have come to the Greek islands in the hopes of continuing on to Northern Europe. They have to wait here until their asylum applications have been processed. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, recently said that Moria was dangerous for women and children. But they are the ones who must stay here.
They don't give documents for people to leave this place. They don't have good food, don't have security, water, no good electricity. For example, now, no have electricity.
Many refugees have taken matters into their own hands to stay warm. Now that it's getting colder, they simply light old olive trees. Ahmed Al-Majid left his country to escape violence. He doesn't want to be lumped together with lawbreakers. He wants to leave Lesbos, but for now a ferry ticket to Athens remains just a distant dream.
That report was by Oliver Zalet at the Greek island of Lesbos. And remember, we are monitoring the story in South Africa. Anytime soon, results from the election between two main contenders to lead the ANC in the next 10 years, that is Cyril Ramaphosa and Dlamini Zuma and Zuma, will be out. We might break this story whenever it happens. You are still tuned to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Ghana's congested high schools are hit by a deadly health crisis.
My child is in this school and I have been told the students are dying. I am here to take my child home.
And some of you have been commenting on this story, like Michael Adu, who says, it has never been tried on such a large scale before to contain certain problems, especially in high schools, whenever epidemics arise. We shall bring more comments on this story.
But first, let's bring you this exclusive story from Tanzania and the United Nations. Funded, trained and equipped anti-poaching rangers have now been implicated in the world's worst elephant killings. Tanzania lost nearly 12,000 elephants in just 1 year in around the Ruaha National Park. Deutsche Welle has new evidence that the presence of the rangers increased the rate of killing, casting suspicion on some of the rangers themselves. This report by Lucy Taylor in Tanzania is presented by Ineke Mules.
Ruaha National Park is the largest national park not only in Tanzania, but also in the East African region. Here, the illegal ivory trade has reduced the elephant's population to a third of its size. But evidence suggests that those who were supposed to be protecting the elephants were also involved in the killings, despite millions of dollars of international aid being spent to pay the rangers. One ranger, fearing for his safety, told DW that he knew some of his colleagues were colluding with the poachers.
They give them rounds. For example, the poacher has a gun, but he has no ammunition, so he gets it from the ranger.
Aerial surveys show clusters of carcasses close to three ranger posts. Elephants are being killed within 500 metres of these stations, prompting suspicion on some of the rangers themselves. At the peak of the massacre, 30 elephants were killed in a single day. Dr. Colin Beale from the University of New York explains.
See the hot spots around two or three of the ranger posts, and it's hard to explain those except in relation to the ranger post, that somehow the rangers are probably complicit in poaching. We estimate that around about 5% of rangers may have some connection with poachers and are able to inform them about the activities of the patrols.
Documents show that the United Nations Development Project helped to train and equip the rangers. The project, which was partly funded by foreign aid, was held in such high regard that the organization's global administrator came to visit. But the poachers continued to work with impunity. Tourism companies also raised the alarm, contacting authorities after hearing gunshots and finding bullet cases scattered on the ground. Mary Sandifer is a former tourism camp manager at Ruaha National Park.
We were devastated, absolutely devastated, because this had been happening on our doorstep, and Ruaha had always been renowned for its elephant population.
But what happened in Ruaha is part of a global scramble for tusks. Fueled largely by the ivory markets in Asia, it is threatening the elephant's survival. Across Africa, millions of dollars are being spent on fighting poaching, says Mary Rice, the executive director of the Environmental Investigation Agency.
It's not about whether the money has been spent on new vehicles or workshops or night vision binoculars, but it's what impact has that expenditure had. If you can't show impact for the millions of pounds that you've spent, then you shouldn't be getting the money in the first place.
They say that elephants never forget. But if the killing continues, elephants themselves may become nothing more than a memory.
A report by Lucy Taylor in Tanzania.
Now, Jane, that exclusive story from Tanzania has also gotten some comments from Facebook. where we asked what is the best way to deal with poaching in African countries. And Abdullah Jaffar says, this is simple. Elephant tusks are being auctioned in open daylight in UN member countries. Recently, Trump administration has cancelled ban on its importation to Africa, to America rather. If there's no demand, there'll be no supply. The UN and other interested bodies should seek a worldwide ban on the auction. And most importantly, the superpowers should set the example. Well said, Abdullah Jaffar.
Ndeso Ndeso says, I keep saying that the UN is a racket, but you don't seem to listen. The UN is the worst of the worst.
And Michael Adu says, so much for Magufuli's zero tolerance for corruption. Anyway, keep those comments flowing and we'll be back right after this.
Health check.
Now, since the rolling out of free senior secondary education in Ghana, there has been an increase in enrollment in schools countrywide. Boarding facilities have been overstretched and classrooms have been congested. As a result, there's been an outbreak of deadly diseases like meningitis in high schools in various parts of the country. At least 13 students have been confirmed dead since the outbreak of diseases like swine flu and meningitis due to these congestions in the schools. As a Kalichi Nakra reports.
The crying of a mother who has just lost her 15-year-old daughter after succumbing to a respiratory disease in one of the country's high schools in Kumasi, Ghana's second largest city. The victim is not the only one. 12 others also died in recent days after succumbing to swine flu, according to authorities, throwing many parents in a fit of panic.
Some are crying, some say they are feeling pains in their stomach, but yet they are not allowing the paying parents to pick their wards. The incident is too much. Last six, just this morning, one died, and this morning, one fainted in front of me. It's not easy.
My child is in this school, and I have been told the students are dying. I am here to take my child home. I usually don't listen to the radio, but I just heard it on the radio, so I am here to find out. I am scared, and if this is the only school he would go and die, then I want him to stop schooling and stay home.
What appeared to be a case of just one school soon spread across the country, with many schools in Ghana's eastern, northern, and upper east regions all recording cases of respiratory diseases. However, in these areas, officials attributed the deaths to meningitis. Many students have since raised concerns about the hygienic conditions under which they live.
Some of the places around us is not neat at all. When you clean it, you find some insects on it and they are not good for our health.
We come to our dormitory, some of them are just sleeping on the floor for just to have some place to lay their heads.
If you want to come and ease yourself, it's not easy at all. You come and form a cube, and if you don't take time, you disgrace yourself.
The government has been criticized for its slow response to the crisis. Criticism that has not gone down well with the health minister, Kweku Ajimanmenu.
We have never delayed. People don't understand health systems. We have our emergency response, plans there already. The report that I got was saying that there are new strains of meningitis. And not until it attacks. You can't find what vaccines even to use to try to take it off. So they couldn't have gone vaccinating everybody without even identifying which of the new strains that is causing the problem.
For now, parents can only hope that the health crisis in high schools ends soon.
Isaac Kalichi reporting from Accra. And we asked you what you think about this outbreak of diseases in high schools in many parts of Ghana.
And Michael Adu says it has never been tried on such a large scale before, so there were certain problems that could only be identified once the program was started.
Alumuku Futefa says, you are talking now. Rome was not built in a day. It is better to have that note. Those unfortunate ones that have died, God will surely console their families in order that same families shall enjoy when things are shaped.
Francis Waroy says, I believe there is no initiative without problems when first implemented, if it's not now.
And Rahman Jima says, I'm yet to be informed that there has been an empirical evidence that suggests the students' current conditions brought about the respiratory diseases or the meningitis being talked about. Meningitis kills at least one person every day. Education for all is a must for every citizen of our nation. Keep those comments flowing.
And now let's move to sports because, as usual, every Monday we have some sports for you, and Samson O'Malley is here with a rundown of results from the weekend tournaments.
We begin the sports with the final of the SACAFA Senior Challenge Cup, which came to a close on Sunday. Host Kenya emerged champions after beating Zanzibar 3-2 on post penalties. The two sides had tied 2-2 at extra time, forcing the winner to be decided through spot kicks. Kenyan goalkeeper Patrick Matasi was the hero of the game after he blocked three penalties to hand the Harambee Stars their 13th title in the regional tournament at the Kenyatta Stadium, Machakos, on Sunday. Nick Wendwa is the president of the Football Kenya Federation.
This team will get 11.5 million shillings tomorrow. I have not even calculated how much it is. This has never been done in Kenya football. So they are enthusiastic. They have been taken care of and they've done their job.
In women football news, Nigeria under 17 women team progressed to the final round of the qualifying series for the 2018 FIFA under 17 Women's World Cup on away goal rule after they were held to a 0-0 draw by Ethiopia. Nigeria Football Federation President Amaju Pinnick was among fans who watched the game in Benin City.
Because they're going to meet a very tough team. The next round they are playing against Cameroon. We've been beating Cameroon, so they might want to come here with all kinds of zeal, all kinds of determination and resilience.
Earlier in Johannesburg, South Africa under 17 side defeated Botswana 6-4 in the second leg at the Dobsonville Stadium as they prevailed 11-6 on aggregate. In other matches, Cameroon, who grabbed a 4-0 first leg away win in Algiers, hammered Algeria 7-0 at the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium to advance on 11-0 aggregate win. While at the Cape Coast Stadium, Susie Dede and Patience Kunduk ensured Ghana earned a 2-0 win over the Gambia to seal their passage with an aggregate win of 7-2. Nigeria will now face Cameroon and South Africa will confront Morocco, while Ghana will engage Djibouti in the final round of the qualifying series. The first leg of the last round of qualifiers will take place between February the 2nd to the 4th, while the reserve fixture will take place 2 weeks later. The final three-man shortlist for the AETO CAF 2017 African Footballer of the Year Award will be unveiled later today in Ghana. 11 players were shortlisted for the flagship award for African football last month, and the number will be pruned down to three. Bertrand Traoré of Burkina Faso, Ugandan goalkeeper Dennis Onyango, Morocco's Karim El Amadi, and Senegalese duo of Keita Balde and Sadio Mane were among those in the 10-man shortlist.
Samson O'Malley there with that rundown of tournaments that happened over the weekend.
And we would like to acknowledge our followers on Facebook who are following the news live, and those commenting, keep the spirit up. Now, away from sports to music, on Facebook we also have the story of Neka, a German Nigerian musician.
And she sings about forgotten traditions and about Nigeria, her homeland, and also how oil companies are bleeding the country dry and how corruption and bribery are leaving people helpless.
We asked you which other artists from your country sing about the political situation.
And Taban Asite in Uganda, he says we have Bobby Wine who sings about the dictator YK Museveni, Yoweri Museveni, who...
I think the Bobby Wine
that word
about
is
the,
what is
the
written
member
here
of parliament. Yeah, no. And well, Tavan, good question. The point is to learn more about each other's country from our community. We had to ask this question because Tavan is wondering why this question was relevant. We just want you to contribute and tell us which artists in your countries do talk about current issues or pertinent issues. Modi Fred in Uganda also said Honorable Chagulanyi, also known as Bobby Wine.
And we have a Pinchas Badu. If African youths are ready for change and for a better living in their continent, Africa, then they must go for 100% revolution and not a nagging.
And Kwae Junior says, in my country, Ghana, they only sing about sex and fashion.
Isaac Godwin, writing from Monrovia, says here in Liberia, one artist who is constantly bringing the problem of the people directly to the government through the music is Takon J. Many Liberians pay more attention to him due to the content in his music.
Pastor Anyango Sebastian from the English-speaking region of Cameroon says, long, long, and Lapiro Dembanga from Cameroon. Well, we have to leave it at that. Our top story was South Africa still awaits the results from the voting of the leadership of the country's ruling party, the ANC. Many thanks to our production crew. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.